The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2013 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2013. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the internet. To find out more about ACCS, or to order additional conference talks, visit our website at accsedu.org. Look for the Conferences tab. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Good afternoon. Just to be sure that you are in the workshop you intended to be in, the name of this workshop is Parent-Teacher Conferences, Developing the Co-Laborer Relationship. Before we get started, let's ask the Lord to bless our time. Father, we come before you just thankful that we can. We are thankful, Lord, for the work that you have given us to do, this awesome task that you have called us to. And so we pray that you would bless our time now as we discuss how to forge better relationships with our parents and how to conduct successful parent-teacher conferences, all for the purpose of serving you better by being a better servant of the students you've called us to teach. So we ask all this in Christ's name. Amen. My name is Ron Gilley, and I am the grammar school lead teacher at Trinitas Christian School in Pensacola, Florida. The school was founded in 1999. I've been there for most of that time as a parent and or board member and or teacher. Before we go any farther, we're not going to use that. Is that bothering anybody? Okay. All right. Just me. Instead of being in the limelight, I'm in the blueberry light. As you probably deduced by the title of the workshop, we are going to talk about parent-teacher conferences this afternoon. My goal is to give you as much practical exposition as I can in the short time that we have together. Now, I'm not doing that in the spirit of, hey, I've got it all figured out. So I want you to know that I don't think I have all of this figured out, and we don't think we have it all figured out at Trinitas either. So with that in mind, I'm going to plan to stop a couple of times for questions and for an opportunity, maybe for an exchange of ideas. So when that time comes, if you have a good question or you have something that, to offer that you can do briefly, please don't be silent. My ultimate goal, of course, is for you guys to leave here encouraged about conducting parent-teacher conferences and maybe with some new ideas or some new tools for doing that. We're going to start out by defining some terms and then just sort of laying a little bit of groundwork so you can better understand where I'm coming from when I talk about parent-teacher conferences and this whole co-laborer relationship thing, and just so that we can maybe all stay on the same page. First, what is a co-laborer relationship? Well, I think we're all familiar with the fact that according to Deuteronomy 6, it's parents who bear the burden of responsibility for educating their children. For various reasons, they come to our schools to get help fulfilling that responsibility. But our coming alongside and helping them doesn't relieve them of that responsibility. We simply come alongside and help them fulfill it and stand in loco parentis, or in place of the parent, during the school day. Now, this unique relationship that we have with the parents, sort of bearing this responsibility together, is what makes us co-laborers in the education of their children. Next, what do I mean by parent-teacher conference? A parent-teacher conference is a meeting between the parents of an individual student and that student's teacher to discuss the student's progress and to make plans for the student's future academic and spiritual success. Now, there's more than one type of parent-teacher conference, of course. One type that I'm going to be talking about this afternoon is a regularly scheduled conference, a conference that comes at regular intervals. These are routine conferences between meetings between parents and teachers. And now there's another type of conference that is scheduled on short notice to address some issue that needs immediate attention. We're probably all familiar with that second type of parent-teacher conference. Those are the ones that occur when there's trouble or when there's maybe trouble brewing on the horizon. And we meet with the parents in more of a a crisis mode or a crisis prevention mode. And so obviously that is an important and useful type of conference. And we should have those when we need to. But what I'm proposing today is if we have these routine parent-teacher conferences and we do a good job with them, that we'll have to schedule far fewer of the crisis mode conferences. So I'm going to be advocating this afternoon for routine, regularly scheduled parent-teacher conferences and discussing ways to do a good job with those conferences so that they become effective tools in that co-laborer relationship. Before we get going too much farther, let me just get a show of hands. How many of you work at schools or are parents at schools where mandatory parent-teacher conferences are held every year? A little over half the room. Okay, good. Any questions at this point about my terms, what I'm talking about with the co-labor relationship parent-teacher conference? Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about the way that we do parent-teacher conferences at Trinitas, and the reason for that is pretty obvious. I don't know how you do them at your school. I know how we do them. And again, I'm not saying that we've got the thing figured out or that we do it the only right way, but what we're doing works. And so what I'm hoping is you can glean something from that, or we can get a conversation going that will be helpful for us all. So at Trinitas, we schedule two mandatory parent-teacher conferences per student per school year. So twice during the school year, the parents come into the school and they sit down face-to-face with their child's teacher for a real meeting. And there's no getting around it. They have to do it. It's not an option. They have to come in. And we usually meet at the beginning of the second quarter and then again at the beginning of the fourth quarter, both times just a day or two after a student has gotten a report card. So those always make for exciting conferences. Having two of the conferences every year, I think, instead of just having one is important because the second conference provides for a measure of accountability for both the parents and for the teacher that wouldn't exist if you're just having one, might not exist, I should say, if you just have one conference per year. So I think meeting twice a year gives you an opportunity to come back and assess how the plans you made at the first conference are going. Maybe the goals that you may have set together with the parents. It gives you an opportunity to assess how that's going, sort of holds you accountable. So I think really meeting twice a year is about right. Of course, you're still going to need to meet as often as necessary with parents who want to see you or as problems arise with a student. But those are over and above what I'm talking about. I'm talking about two mandatory, regularly scheduled parent-teacher conferences every year. And for our purposes, we like to schedule those for about 15 minutes. Some parents, you think, I don't have any trouble with this student. They really get it. The parents get it. We're all on the same page. Everything's great. And so you may be able to have a 10-minute parent-teacher conference with them. There are no real issues to struggle with. Others aren't going to be that way. They're going to take a lot longer. And so what we do at our school, some of our teachers will schedule 15-minute parent-teacher conferences back to back to back. What I like to do, and we have a couple teachers who do this, and it works really well, is schedule two parent-teacher conferences per hour. So you got two 15-minute conferences in there, one at the beginning of the hour, and then you got a break, and then another one at the bottom of the hour, and then you got a break. So what that allows you to do is go a little over if you need to. What you have to be careful about doing there is being faithful to the beginning time of that next conference. You don't want to make a parent think that they're not as important as the parent who's sitting in your classroom right then. So just be faithful to those starting times. But you can fudge that 15 minutes a little bit if you need to, plus have a few minutes to get prepared for the next conference. Get your thoughts together and whatever materials you might still need to get together before the next conference comes in. And I suggest that the school office takes care of scheduling all these appointments. Again, the way that we do it, we put a sign-up sheet. The office, they ask us, when can we meet? And so the teachers submit to the office a list of times that we can meet. And so the main office takes care of putting together a schedule for each teacher, and we put that in a place where the parents can come at their convenience and sign up for your appointment times. So, if you're a fifth grade teacher or a fourth grade teacher and you've got 20 students in your class and you're willing to stay after school a couple hours a couple extra hours, you can meet with four sets of parents. So you do that five times, and you've covered all of your parents. And what we do is cram that into a two-week period. So we say, these are our appointment times within this 2 weeks. So you don't just, it's not an open-ended thing where you come in any time during the year for two conferences. It's got to be during that 2 weeks. Obviously, that makes for a really busy two-week period in the life of our school, but we found that it's an efficient way of getting it done, and we don't end up having to chase parents down afterwards to try to get them to schedule appointments. Everybody knows you've got this amount of time. These are the appointments available. You've got to sign up. It's your obligation. And so we're able to make that happen really pretty efficiently. So to review now, we're talking about teachers meeting with parents twice a year and regularly scheduled parent-teacher conferences last roughly 15 minutes. And we do this because we are co-laborers with the parents in the endeavor of educating their children, and we should want that element of communication and accountability in that very important relationship. Everybody on the same page? Any questions? Okay. So now that we've established exactly what type of parent-teacher conference it is that we're talking about and why they're important, let's get to the practical side of it, and how we can what are some things that we can do these well. For the parent-teacher conference to be an effective tool in that co-laborer relationship, I feel like there are about three key elements that have got to be in place. If you have nothing else, these three things have to be in place. First, and this should follow the outline that you have. First, you have to prepare in advance for your parent-teacher conference. You've got to be ready for it. These can't catch you by surprise. Next, you have to lead productive conferences rather than be led. And in that leading, you've got to do that in a spirit of humility. Finally, you have to continue the communication with the parents after the conference is over so that this relationship begins to bear some fruit in the life of the student. And I understand that some of that fruit's going to be years down the road, but you've got to keep that communication up. To get started, let's just say that, like most everything else, a parent-teacher conference, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. It's going to be as productive as you are prepared for it. So I encourage you to start far in advance. The first phase of that preparation is communicating to and establishing a relationship with the parents. So talking to those parents, beginning to forge a relationship with those parents. Now, this type of preparation can occur long before a conference, should occur long before a conference, and in some case could occur years before you ever meet a parent in a parent-teacher conference. This sort of thing doesn't happen by accident. The school has got to be purposeful. The teachers have got to be purposeful about seeking out parents to forge relationships, and that's a lot easier to do if the school is being purposeful about creating and cultivating opportunities for those kinds of relationships to grow. So I'm talking about relationships outside of just the classroom. At Trinitas, one of our main goals is to build community, or put another way, to build a family atmosphere within the school. It's just something we do. It's part of our culture. And so to meet that goal, we purposefully get together all the time, not just every day when the school bell rings, but we get together as an entire school all the time. I'm talking about board, administrators, teachers, grandparents, students, the whole shebang. Now, we're not putting events on the calendar and saying, you know, these are community building events and attendance is mandatory, but we do some sort of creative things with what's already on the calendar to encourage parents and others to be there and encourage that getting together. So, for example, we don't charge a gate fee at any of our athletic events, and I feel really awkward saying that following the conference that was just in here about building an athletic department on a small budget. She would not want to see our budget. But we don't charge a gate fee. And so while we have only about 200 students, really a few less than 200 students at our school, we're going to draw way over 200 people at a Friday night soccer game because we don't charge a gate fee. And it's just a really good community building time outside of school. We have a barbecue in the fall. We have a bonfire in the late winter, early spring. We have a parent-teacher Christmas party. And all of these things are attended by hundreds of people. At our fall barbecue, we usually have 300 to 350 people for a school that only has a few less than 200 students. So we get good attendance. And what all of this party atmosphere creates, the sort of the side effect of this party atmosphere that we create, is an opportunity for parents and teachers and board members and administrators to get to know each other completely outside of the classroom, outside of the sort of that parent-teacher relationship. So you get to know something about people that has something to do with other than the student, and that's healthy. Another way that we get teachers and parents together is by simply increasing opportunities to rub elbows in the hallways at school and just say good morning to each other. So here's an example. We don't have a drop-off. We encourage parents to park their cars and get out of the cars and come in. Now, you're not going to be able to do that at every school, but we built our school in such a way that it just facilitates that. We have a big, wide foyer that opens up into a grand hall, and parents walk in with their children, and you got a grand hall full of people that are just mingling and talking. And so we have an opportunity to see each other, and it's something other than, it doesn't have to have that school feel to it. It's just, hey, how you doing? You know, good to see you this morning. Furthermore, we start each day with a school-wide assembly, and we're really creative down at Trinitas. We call it morning meeting, and it lasts about 10 minutes, and we read scripture, and we pray, and we recite our memory passage for the month together, and we sing. We love to sing. We do a lot of singing, and we want the parents to be at that. So it's more than just an invitation to come. It's be there. If there's any way you can, be there. And it's such a sweet way to start the day. You leave there really feeling, like you've worshiped. And so we're with them in the halls. We're seeing them in the halls. And then we're in that sort of that devotion time, I guess, really would be a better way to describe it, in the morning together. And then again in the afternoon, park your car, come in. Don't just swing through and pick up. We don't have a student pickup, or I've heard it called carpool. We don't have that. We want them to come in. Now, they don't have to come in. We're not making them come in. But we want them to come in. We even ask them to stay after school and use the playground facilities. And we have parents and students at our school until 5 o'clock almost every day, just hanging out, just playing. So we've done that on purpose, okay? That didn't happen by accident. We did that purposefully. But you don't have to. You don't have to continue to perpetuate it. Once it gets going, people love each other. They want to be together. So it sort of takes off. I'm not saying that you need to have a long conversation with every parent every morning or every afternoon. I mean, you don't have time for that, and they probably don't have time for that either. But what it does is it gives you an opportunity to just see them in the hall, shake their hands, and say, hey, have a nice day. We grow familiar with each other. We get comfortable with each other far more than we ever could if they were just parking their car, or not parking their car, just dropping the kids off in the parking lot and never coming in. Furthermore, this is a time, if I've got anything encouraging to say to a parent, this is a time I can do it, okay? Something that's not really a conversation starter, but just something quick that gives the parent something they can latch on to for the day. This is just something, there's no motive. Just, I want to be kind, all right? I want them to know that their student's doing well. I want them to leave there knowing that their student's doing well, and they're going to feel better about me because I'm doing that. So I'm not talking about an extended conversation here again. Hey, Johnny's sitting still in class this week. You know, I can tell y'all been working on it at home. Thanks a lot. Or Susie did great on her literature test yesterday. Or maybe it's more involved if you've got 30 seconds. Hey, Johnny's still struggling in math, and so I've got some things I want to talk to you guys about. I got some suggestions that I think would help you. When can we meet? And you don't have to schedule an appointment right then, but just say, hey, look, I'm open every afternoon this week. Call the office and make an appointment. So you just in 15 seconds, you know, you got a parent who was, my kid's going to fail, and all of a sudden he's got some hope. He's got something to latch on to. This is also a good time to plant a seed. On more than one occasion, I have said, hey, I read a book last week, and I was thinking about you guys. Have you and your wife read Future Men? You really should get that. I got a copy you can borrow. So it's a good opportunity for those kinds of exchanges. And again, those seem like small things, but we're getting to know each other, you know, and we're sort of building one another up, encouraging one another. And that's the goal. We want our parents and teachers to forge relationships, even friendships, with each other that go far beyond the classroom. And I think for many teachers and parents, this is sort of counterintuitive, because somehow we've come to view one another in many cases, I think, as adversaries. And that's just wrong-headed. I mean, we just shouldn't be thinking that way. To start with, we're brothers and sisters in the body of Christ, okay? So we don't have permission to think that way. But furthermore, we've got a responsibility to these parents, because we're in the co-laborer relationship with them, with a parent who is going to answer to God for that child's education, and for us who's standing in loco parentis 30 or 40 hours a week. So there's a responsibility there. And I'm talking about building relationships not just with the parents of the students that you have right now, but with the parents of the students that you're going to have one day. So parents of students that you may not teach for 3 or 4 years, you can get to know them if you create these types of situations. And so that may seem like a bit of overkill, like just a bit of too much, or preparation that's occurring too far in advance. But let's face it. Now, for you to do your job effectively, you are necessarily going to have to say some difficult things to some parents. You're going to have to inflict some faithful wounds. And who would you rather have to deliver those kinds of messages to? A parent that you're meeting for just the first or second time in a conference, or someone that you've known for a long time? Someone who's maybe even ready for you to inflict those faithful wounds? I think the answer is obvious. So when the day of the parent-teacher comes, you want to be sitting across the table from parents that you know, and you know are ready to receive the counsel that you have. And that goes both ways. Our administrator, Mr. Ken Trotter, some of you may know him, he likes to use a metaphor here to explain the importance of well-maintained relationships. He compares this idea of building relationships with parents and with teachers, students rather, with getting soil ready for plants. So saying a difficult thing to a parent that you've cultivated a relationship with is a little bit like planting a seed or a young plant into soil that's been composted and fertilized and watered over time. So these parents that you've established a relationship with are far more likely to trust you or even desire your counsel, so that when you say that difficult thing to them in a parent-teacher conference, like the plant or the seed that's planted in the good soil, your words are going to bring forth fruit. You're going to be helpful to them. So as important as these parent-teacher conferences are and our co-laborer relationship that we're in with these parents, sometimes the face-to-face relationship building time that's invested long, long before the conference ever begins can be even more important. Two things are going to have to happen here, again, to increase the teacher's chances that these kinds of relationships are going to develop. Number one, teacher's got to be purposeful. Teacher has got to be purposeful in doing this. And I would say that goes both ways. The parent needs to be purposeful as well. But the teacher's going to have to be purposeful. That parent is not your enemy. They're your co-laborer. Y'all are in this thing together. It's almost like a what do they call it, three-legged race, you know? It really is. And so you got to be intentional about meeting parents. And the school really needs to be trying to create some situations where that can happen. Another important facet of pre-conference communication and relationship building is the written communication that we send home with students. And I think this is something that we're probably a lot more familiar with, because it's something we have to think about every day. But we need to be sure when we're doing this that we're not thinking of it only in terms of negative communication. Everybody knows when you get a note home from the teacher, it's bad, right? And I say let's break that paradigm. We need to break that paradigm. At Trinitas, we use a form, and this is where our creativity shines through again. We use a form we call the parent notification. So this form, it's got all the standard bells and whistles. So it's got the place for the name and the rank and the serial number of the child. And it's a form that we can use to let the parents know Susie's probably going to fail Latin this quarter. So everybody probably sends that kind of stuff out mid-quarter or midterm. We can use it for that. We can use it to let the parents know Johnny's not able to sit still in class today. We need a little help here. But we can also use it to say, hey, Susie passed her literature test today, or Susie did really well on her literature test today, or Johnny was really preferring his classmates in class today. And again, those are encouraging things. So now all of a sudden, a note coming home from the teacher is positive, all right? And so as much as parents need to know the trouble that their students are having in school, they need to know about those good things too. So you may not have a form like that. They're easy to create, or just use stationery. Just use some nice stationery and send a nice written note home for positive things as much as you do for negative things. I don't think I have to tell you, three or four notes coming home before a parent-teacher conference that are just hounding on a kid for something, and the parent's going to come in with some preconceived notions that you don't like his kid very much. So or send some positive stuff home too. Whatever, we've got to get beyond graded papers. I mean, I know we're all putting notes on papers. Hey, you need to study more, or this is, you knew the answer to this in class yesterday, what happened, or, that sort of thing. And that obviously needs to keep going, but you got to send those notes home. And we have a saying, and maybe another creative moment for Trinitas. The saying is no surprises. We don't want a parent to get a surprise on a report card. We don't want a parent to get a surprise in a parent-teacher conference. I don't want to sit across from parents and have them hear for the first time in that parent-teacher conference about some heinous pattern of sin that a child's involved in. So no surprises. So all of that, even that written communication, is part of building that relationship with parents. They've got a rapport with you already because of this relationship building that you're doing, and part of it is this written communication. No surprises. Remember that. I think it's a good one. So while communicating well and building great relationships with parents, to me, probably the most important thing you can do ahead of the parent-teacher conference, it's not going to count for much if you don't have anything to say to the parent. So there's some real nuts and bolts things that have to be done. And I don't mean to suggest that we can't come up with a dozen things right off the top of our head to say about all of our students. But remember, we're talking about really short time frame here, 15-minute parent-teacher conference. And so we don't want to just talk about the dozen things that come right off the top of our heads. We want to choose those topics of conversation really carefully. And so we got to do some homework or some groundwork ahead of time before the conference. And so one thing I strongly recommend is keeping notes on every student. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate. It needs to be something, though, that you can get to quickly, and something that you can keep up, something that's sort of easy to keep up. And keep notes on patterns of behavior that you see in students, not just academically, but in their Christian character. Just short little notes. We had a kindergarten teacher one time who had a really simple system that I appreciated very much. She created a Word document each year for her new class and just put the student's name in bold, and she just started running notes under each one. And she didn't enter something every day. She didn't always even date stamp what she entered. Sometimes it wasn't complete sentences. And I know all this because I would review her report card comments, and she would keep those running notes, and then underneath that she would put her report card comments. And so I would look at her report card comments before we printed the report cards, and I would get to see all of her running notes. And so what she was able to do before her parent-teacher conferences is sit down and look at that list of notes that she had kept on that student, and I dare say she did it more frequently than that. But doing it before the parent-teacher conference allowed her to look through there and pick out some patterns. Maybe patterns she didn't even realize were going on, but all of a sudden she's seeing, oh my goodness, I've had to tell Jack to tuck his shirt in 15 times this quarter. You know, we need to figure out there's probably more to that. And then all of a sudden she's thinking, yeah, and his shoes are never tied, and he comes in without his hair combed. And now there's a pattern. Okay, this is something she probably needs to talk to the parents about. And hopefully she already has, because no surprises, right? But anyway, that's a simple thing that you can do. And it will also help you remember samples of what work needs to be gotten together ahead of a parent-teacher conference. So good notes are important. Again, I know we can probably say a lot of things right off the top of our head about the students, but, you know, in the midst of a conversation when you're trying to fit everything in a very short time period, I think it's best to have notes. Something else you're going to want to do is get together samples of a student's work ahead of time. And the notes are something that's going on maybe all quarter long. The samples of the work, that's something you can get together just days in advance. But, you know, it's one thing to tell parents that Johnny's math work is really messy, but it's another thing entirely to show them how dreadful Johnny's math work is when you're, you know, when you're both sitting right there together looking at Johnny's math work. So ideally, as we said earlier, the parents are already going to know that you think Johnny's math work is messy because you've got a relationship with him, and maybe they've seen the notes on his work or you've sent notes home. So they're sort of prepared to hear it, but, you know, maybe they haven't understood exactly what do you mean? What do you mean messy? So now you've got this opportunity while you're both sitting there looking at Johnny's work to say, this is what I'm talking about right here. I can't even find the answer in this math problem. Here's where the trouble is. So what a parent may once have just dismissed as your opinion that Johnny's work was messy now becomes cold, hard facts when you're sitting there together looking at the work. And remember, as you gather samples of a student's work before a parent-teacher conference, you've got this idea of what you need to talk about, and you're looking for the work that you want to show them. You're not an attorney building a case against a mass murderer, okay? So the temptation is to grab all of Johnny's messy work. But I would submit that a better idea, certainly you need to have some those samples, I would submit that a better idea is to look for some samples of his work that are acceptable. Some, if he's done any, that are more like what you're looking for. So now when you're sitting with the parents, you can say, look, he's capable of this, and it still may not be quite where I want him to go, but it's a lot closer than what he's doing here. And so they're going to get on your side now. They're going to sort of see what you're talking about, and they're going to be better equipped. They've got something concrete now instead of something abstract, and they're going to be better equipped to talk to Johnny every night when he's doing his math homework and help him figure out what it is that you want and hold him accountable to that. So you're really removing the subjectivity from that whole process. And there are going to be times when that may not be enough. And so I would say again, they need to know exactly what it is that you want. They need a concrete example of exactly what you're looking for. I would say show them a sample of another student's work. And this may be a controversial sort of idea, but you've got to remove the abstractness from it. There's got to be something concrete that they can latch onto. I've done this a few times with good results, and all I've done is made a copy of a student's work and just blotted the name out with a black Sharpie and said, this is what I'm looking for. I'm not comparing students. This is what your son or your daughter is capable of. And that's where you have to be careful, too, because if you've got a student who is going to have to work hard to produce C+, B- work, you don't want to show the parents samples of work that came from a straight-A student. Number one, they're probably going to say, yeah, right. But if you make them believe that their child's capable of that work when he may not be, then they're going to provoke him to wrath. And so you don't want to put anybody in that situation. It's far better to show them a sample of something that's less than what he could do, and then you can raise the bar next time. But I think just having something concrete there, just to remove the subjectivity. It's one thing to say, I want to see better work. It's another thing to say, I want to see work that looks like this, and I know he can do it. So a big part of being prepared then is knowing what needs to be covered And you're helping yourself out with that by keeping notes leading up to the parent-teacher conference so you know what to cover in the conference. Those notes also help you know which of the students' work you need to get together before the conference. And again, the notes are going to be an ongoing project. You need to they're just going to make you a better teacher to keep notes like that on a student. You need to keep those up all the time. The samples of the work can be gotten together days in advance. Again, you're trying to make best use of the time because there's just not going to be enough time to talk about everything that you would want to say about the student. So you've got to be sure that you're picking the right battles here. So it's best if you plan out every minute of the conference and set goals for that. So you're going to make plans and set goals so that you've got every minute of this conference planned out. You're not going to be able, of course, you're not going to be able to solve all the students' problems in a 15-minute parent-teacher conference. You may not be able to solve any of them, but you surely can't solve them all. The solving of the problems is what happens in the everyday, in the living, in the classroom, in the milieu. What you're doing is just trying to get a common understanding here with the parents. So the goals that you set for your conferences are goals that need to be focused on bringing you and the parents to a similar understanding of where the student is currently, and both academically and spiritually, and how to move forward for the vision that you both have for that student. So as you make your agenda, I would just say set realistic goals and don't focus so much on fixing the things that you see wrong with the student, fixing those little issues. Try to set goals that help you understand why the student has those issues. So, just finding common ground there. What happens is if you get to the root of the problem and learn why those situations exist, then you got a better chance of building a common understanding with the parents. So rather than going into a conference planning to complain to Johnny's parents that he apparently never studies for his tests because he's always failing his tests, you might be better served by setting yourself a goal of simply getting a better understanding of how Johnny studies or does not study or what that looks like at home. So you can better help the parents better understand how Johnny needs to be studying. So, you can get yourself, work yourself into a position where they're interested in some advice. I'd go back here and say that we're co-laborers with these parents in the education of their children. So, often I think we forget it. And we one or the other, the parent or the teacher, comes to the conference with the intention of giving the other a piece of his mind. And I think that's why we end up with some adversarial relationships. It's a very simple thing, for example, for a teacher to come into a conference with a list of complaints about a student. Here's a list. Let me just give you a list. Here are the 15 things Johnny's doing wrong. Or here are the 15 things that you're doing wrong, which is even worse. And if you do that, I can assure you you're going to have an adversarial relationship. So instead, I would just encourage you to set to plan out your conference very carefully based on what you know you've got to cover in a short amount of time. And then set goals ahead of time, not to fix issues, but to help you get a common understanding with the parents about what the issues are and how they became issues. Again, I'm not talking about these lofty change the world in a day goals. I'm talking about simple things. So here are just a few goals that I've gone into parent-teacher conferences with. Gain a better understanding of the student's study methods. Find out the family's approach to homework. Give the parents a better understanding of how I structure the class. Learn more about the student's home life. Of course, these goals have to be individualized for each student. Those aren't one-size-fits-all goals. And they sound really probably overly simple, but let's plug one of them into an example just to see how it might work in practice. And it will work because I control the example. Let's say... So let's say Johnny is doing poorly in every subject, but Johnny seems to be a fairly bright boy. I mean, you can tell he's a fairly bright boy. He usually pays attention in class. He works while he's in class. Where's the disconnect? Why are his grades not good? Something's wrong here. So Johnny's new to the school, and you don't know a lot about his family. So your goal for a parent-teacher conference in that situation would be just find out about the family so you can figure out why Johnny's not doing well. So you can figure out, is Johnny doing anything at home? Or are the parents helping? What's going on there? So you can, better advise the parents. So how would it change your approach to Johnny or your advice to the parents if you found out that Johnny spends several hours on many afternoons every week watching his six-year-old sister because his parents are having to work extra shifts to pay tuition? Now you might not feel so hard at Johnny. And I'm not suggesting that you're going to change the standard for Johnny because Johnny's in a bad situation, but neither are you going to give him the same advice about studying for tests and doing homework that you would give to a student whose family is at home together every evening of the week. Okay, so now that you know the obstacles that Johnny's facing in studying and doing homework, you're going to be able to better help him figure out a study plan, a homework plan, how to get that done in the face of these obstacles that he's up against every day. Now, that's an example in a controlled setting. I understand that, but I think it makes my point here that you shouldn't go into a parent-teacher conference with a list of complaints or gripes or things that you want to get fixed to unload on parents. Instead, it's always far more productive to set goals for conferences that, when you achieve them, allow you to be a better teacher of that particular student and a better co-laborer with that particular set of parents. So once you've planned the parent-teacher conference and you've set your goals to achieve the desired outcomes, the day's going to come when you actually have to meet the parents face-to-face in the parent-teacher conference. Does anybody get anxious about those? Yeah. I don't know why that is. But our administrator, Mr. Trotter, he's so wise. He always tells teachers, stop worrying. I promise you that the parents are just as anxious as you are. And he's right. They are. And the reason is, you've got that child in your classroom every day, and every single mistake that those parents have made with that child and more is on display in that child every day, and they're scared to death that they're going to get into a parent-teacher conference and be judged for it. So they're just as anxious as we are. Don't judge them. And so let's talk about some ways you can quickly put parents at ease so that you can lead a truly productive conference. First, remember that you are leading the conference. You lead the conference, okay? Now, this is part of your coming alongside the parents as a co-laborer, but you're there to sort of give them a report. And what we're hoping for is you're going to work yourself into a situation where they trust you. Hopefully you've taken care of a lot of that on the front end, but you're going to work yourself into a situation where they trust you and they want your advice too. But you're there to give them a report on the progress, both academically and spiritually. So it's natural that you lead the conference. So the parents come in, you shake their hands, you're friendly, you sit down and just take the lead right away. That takes a little pressure off because they see you're driving and they see how it's going to go. Okay. So if you start with, well, what do y'all think? They're going to be more anxious than ever. So you're going to have everything planned out, remember, and you're going to have set specific goals so you're well prepared to lead the conference. Be sure to save a few minutes for their questions because there's going to be something you haven't thought about that they're going to have some questions about. Sometimes it's a bombshell, but just leave a few minutes for that. So I always begin the conference with a prayer, a simple prayer. Don't pray that they're going to understand what you have to say and Johnny will do better in class and all that stuff. Just ask the Lord for wisdom, humility, like-mindedness. Ask him for speech that's seasoned with grace as you all seek to better serve him by being good stewards of your responsibilities, both as parents and teachers. Then lead the conference the same way that you prayed, with a sense of humility and gratitude, okay? So you've now that you've set the proper tone for the conference, a big thing is to report the facts objectively. Okay, report the facts objectively. Laying out facts and allowing parents to draw their own conclusions puts them at ease quickly and disarms potentially explosive situations. On the other hand, if you begin by saying to Billy's parents, "Billy is a lazy boy," you're probably not going to get anywhere. So instead of beginning that way with "Billy is a lazy boy," you might begin with something positive about Billy. Again, just be kind. Just be kind. Be kindly affectionate one to another. Sometimes it's tough to find something positive or encouraging to say about a student, but I'll guarantee you there's something you can say or that student probably wouldn't be at your school. So begin with a compliment and an encouragement tends to put them at ease a little bit, and give them a moment to bask in that, to soak that up. They may not get a lot of compliments about little Johnny, so let them soak that up and maybe even respond to it. So next, this is where you bring in the notes you've taken and the samples of the work that you've gathered ahead of time, okay, and you're following your agenda. Use these notes and the samples of the students' work to report facts, not the conclusions now that you may have already drawn, and probably have already drawn. Just report the facts, all right? And since we've been picking on Billy, let's just stick with Billy. Just try to see this point through. Start off with something like, "Billy's grade in math is low because he doesn't always turn in his homework." All right, that's a fact. There's no judgment attached to that. You haven't just judged the parents. Well, they could be feeling a little judged, but you've put it out there in an objective way. He doesn't turn in his homework. There's nothing really that they can pick an argument with there. What you want to do then is you want to show them your grade book or your computer, if you keep your grades on your computer, and you want to show them Billy's math binder. So here are the spots in Billy's math binder where his homework assignment should be, and it's not there. Here is the grade book, and they can see for themselves the missing assignments, and they can see how that has affected his grade. So they're going to begin to draw some of the same conclusions you have already come to at this point. They're probably going to have some questions to ask, and don't get defensive. Continue to report the facts and try to remove the subjectivity as they ask questions so that they can, they're just trying to gain a better understanding. And what we're trying to do is get on the same page with the parent, okay? So they're going to, for Billy's parents, he's probably going to, you know, he's going to ask, they're going to ask, well, how is the homework grade weighted against tests and quizzes, for example? Or how often should Billy be bringing homework home? Which is a very telling question. How much class time does he get to work on that? Is he getting class time to work on it at all? So once you've answered those questions, they're gonna probably have the same understanding that you do about homework. So you've established some common ground with them, and both parties have come to a similar understanding regarding not just math homework, but Billy's failure to do his in particular, and what that's doing to his grade, and that is what's wrong with his grade. So they may at this point volunteer some information. Your goal is to find out what's going on at Billy's house. They may begin to volunteer some information about just what it looks like at their house, how they approach homework in the evenings. If they don't, the door might be open for you to begin to ask some questions. There should be a level of trust that's built up. So ask some open-ended questions. So you don't want to say, you know, when they invite you to say something, "Why don't y'all just make the boy do his homework?" So that's not where you go. Stick to the facts again and ask something that they can talk about. Tell me how Billy goes about doing his homework in the afternoon. What does your house look like in the evening? When does Billy do his homework? That sort of a question. Something that allows them to open up. Because see, now you're in their home. Now you're getting a picture of what it looks like at home. And that's what you really need to know if you're going to be able to help them. But you're not there in a judgmental way. You're not there in an invasive way. You're just having a conversation. And they're inviting you in. So you've got an opportunity, they have an opportunity to explain to you what a normal evening in Billy's home looks like, and you've got an opportunity at this point, if you've presented all the facts really objectively, to begin to really be a co-laborer here, all right? They're not feeling threatened by you. You guys are working together at this point to get Billy to do his homework. So they may be at ease enough for you to make some helpful suggestions. So you, now you're at a point where you can give them that advice. And I don't know what that might look like for you. I wouldn't just jump to make the boy do his homework, which might be what I would do at my house or you would do at your house, but they're not ready to hear that, okay? So make something based on, make a suggestion that's based on what you've just learned, on the facts that you've just gathered. Something like, you know, have you thought about having him do his homework at the kitchen table while mom fixes supper, cooks supper or something? So a comment like that opens up the door for some more give and take. Things that, you know, about structure and about routine and about accountability, things that they may not have been ever been willing to hear from you if you had started that conference off in a more judgmental way, okay? But now they're at ease. So that's why it's important to be as objective as possible and to ask questions that allow the parents to open up to you and sort of invite you in. So now you're establishing a relationship where they might begin to value your wisdom. You know, it may be that they're going to come to you now before there's even a problem. Hey, I see that, you know, Billy's grades dropping. He's not turning in homework. This is what we're doing at home. Can you maybe give me another suggestion? So there's more opportunity in there now all of a sudden. This new dimension in your relationship should also allow you to work together to help them forge a plan for what that should look like going forward. You're both going to leave the conference with some homework of your own. So after you've gotten to this point, you're gonna give them suggestions for what needs to be done in the future to get Billy's homework done. You guys are going to work out a plan together. And they're going to have a part in seeing that that gets done at home. And you're going to have a part in helping them be accountable to that at school. So it may require some extra work on your part. Teachers hardly ever have to do any extra work, so this should be easy. You just being that extra level of accountability for little Billy or something like that, reminding him to take his math book home every afternoon or something like that that you're probably already doing for somebody else anyway. So recap the conference before it's over with. Make sure that everybody's clear about what their homework assignments are. And agree to meet again if you need to, and set a time for that. Go ahead and set a time for that if possible. If you didn't have a relationship with the parents before the conference, you should certainly at least have a foundation for a relationship now if you've done that well. So communication between you and the parents should be easier and more productive. You both should have left the conference with homework. You're going to need to talk to each other occasionally about that homework. Again, love to see that happen before class or after class where it's possible. And we try to make that possible at our school, and you got to be careful with that because you have to guard your time. Just be careful there. So if there's unfinished business at a conference and there needs to be a second conference, make it happen quickly. If it wasn't a good parent-teacher conference and it was contentious, that second conference, maybe the administrator needs to be there. And so plan for that. Here's another thing there. You probably know before a conference which ones are going to be contentious and which ones aren't. And what we do at Trinitas is we let, my teachers will let me know, hey, I think this could go bad. Just check on me. It's my favorite thing to hear. And so then I say, hey, Mr. Trotter, I think that could go bad. Would you mind just ducking your head in there? But one or the other of us will walk by and just stick our head in and say, hey, how's everything going? And you can tell if you need to go in and sit down right away. So if you got one that's going to be contentious and you know it, go ahead and let the administrator know ahead of time that that's going to happen, and maybe they can just check on you. So the bottom line is there's got to be that communication, and the communication now is different than it was before, probably because maybe you were just building a relationship or just getting to know each other. It can be more specific. So those comments I was saying a while ago, like, hey, I read a book and I thought about y'all. This might be something you'd want to read, or hey, I've had some ideas of some study tools that could help your son. Those are the kinds of comments that you're going to make now because you got a rapport with the parent. You guys are really acting like co-laborers there in the three-legged race, and that's what the communication is going to look like after the conference. So not only are you going to know those parents better, you're going to know the students better, you're going to have a far clearer perspective on what this student's life outside of class looks like. That's going to make you a better teacher of all of your students once you've met with all of their parents. You've heard about their habits and their routines and their home lives. You've gotten that picture to the inside of their lives. It's going to help you just be a better teacher of them. You should also be able to engage those parents on a whole new level with a clearer perspective. And so it's going to make you a better co-laborer. You're going to have a similar understanding. You're going to be more like-minded. Parents and teachers who are like-minded are truly facing the task of educating the child as co-laborers are far more likely to succeed than those who are working as adversaries. So let them know, again, this goes back to sort of that positive communication, just let them know that you are in the trenches with them every day and that you love their child. And they like to hear that. You think they know that, but they like to hear it. Hey, I love Junior, and I'm there for you. Let them know that you share the vision that they have or help them develop that vision for raising a mature Christian. My wife and I sometimes get discouraged about our failures at teaching and training and discipling our sons. And, you know, when those kinds of thoughts keep me awake at night, it is an encouragement to me to know that their teachers are praying for them and praying for my wife and I, and that they really and truly are in the trenches with us. I take that as a great encouragement. Ecclesiastes 4:12 says that though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. And so I'm asking you to use these parent-teacher conferences to strengthen this co-laborer relationship so that you can become that third cord for your parents. Thank you. I know everyone is hungry and it's been a long day, but we've got about 5 minutes if there are any questions. Yes, ma'am.
I had a question about your high school students and whether or not you structure your conferences the same way, especially if they have local teachers.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I had it in there, but it was too long, so I cut it out. We have them meet with their core teacher. So we try to arrange it where their core teacher is their Traditio teacher, the one that has them for a couple of hours a day, that teaches, you know, the history and the Bible and all that sort of stuff. So we try to arrange it where they meet with that teacher. Now, what that causes is some extra work on those upper school teachers. They've got to get together, because if there are issues in physics or in calculus that Traditio teacher doesn't know about, he's going to be, or she's going to be, handicapped in that conference. So it means the upper school teachers have to do some meeting before conference time to get their heads together. And then, even then, there are times when there have to be follow-up conferences with all the teachers. But the short answer, they just meet with the core teacher.
Do you have a perspective on panel conference where all the teachers are meeting together with
you? The problem that I see with it is just taking too much time. There's several problems with it. You know, we've got this two-week paradigm in our heads. We want to get it done in 2 weeks. You couldn't get it done in 2 weeks that way. The other thing is, I wouldn't want the parents to feel overwhelmed. You know, if you're sitting in front of five teachers in a lot of cases, you already think that they're way smarter than you anyway, and they're going to judge you. The parents could be overwhelmed. However, if there's a problem, I think that it's wholly appropriate. And I think that there are ways to keep that from being an overwhelming situation for the parent too, especially if there's a problem, because they may be coming wanting that interaction. So it'd be different. So, did you have a question? Yes, ma'am.
I'm with you.
It's rare that we say, you need to be at this. Most of the time, our teachers just come and they bring their families. Not every teacher is going to be there. You know, I think about a kindergarten teacher with a baby at home and a husband she's only been married to 2 or 3 years. She's probably not coming to a barbecue on Saturday, and we're not going to make her come. She's probably not coming to a Friday night soccer. She's more likely to come to the barbecue than the Friday night soccer game. And we're not going to make her come. But there are ways to get around that. You know, and here again, I've worked the example perfectly for me. The kindergarten teacher is going to see her, in our school, is going to see her parents every morning, every afternoon, every one of them. So it's not quite as laid back as a Saturday afternoon barbecue, but very rarely do we make it mandatory. Most teachers come anyway, but not to every single thing. So, other questions? Yes, ma'am. Wow.
And it's so, when the parents can see that, we ask them 4 questions. They're really simple in grammar. What's your favorite subject outside of PE?
Yeah, or science, right?
What is one way with relationships in class that are, anything you want to say about relationships in class, like something going good, something going bad, I have no problems with relationships in class, anything you want to say.
Sure.
And then anything I want my parents or my teacher to know. And there's one other thing. But they're very simple questions. They have to answer them. And we've all been shocked how much the student has shared with the parents. Because we were going to share anyhow. Like, I'm not doing so good in organization.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, so the parents bring that piece to the conference, or you bring it?
We bring it, mm-hmm. But the child has done it within the week of the conference.
Yeah. Well, I can see where that would be really helpful, because you don't just leave there with a similar understanding with the parents. The student's involved, too. So, yeah, I like that. That's a good idea. We've never done that. I would be willing to try it. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am? Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we do something like that too. I didn't mention it, but that's very good. We also send out every Friday, we put not our whole lesson plans, but here's a list of important things that are going to be happening in your child's life at school this week on our website. So they've got a glimpse of that too. And sometimes there's some of that expectation stuff on there. Yeah, that's good. Sort of an orientation. Yes, ma'am? Just the two conferences, and that depends really on what grade level we're talking about. It is really hard, as you guys should, you probably know, for a student to come in the upper grades in a classical situation. And so a lot of times there we'll have multiple parent meetings, and we're doing different types of tutoring to get them caught up, you know, like especially Latin and stuff like that. But again, we put a circle around those new parents and try to meet them ahead of time. It can't always happen that way. It can't always happen that way. And I would say that in that situation, if you see a sign of something, call a meeting. And use that as an opportunity to say, hey, nothing in particular, you know, a couple little things we can talk about. Just wanted to get to know y'all better and let you know about X, Y, and Z. And so, did you have it? Yes, ma'am.
Probably other teachers do the same thing, but weekly I send home a folder with the graded papers. So when parents see that weekly and sign it and bring it back Monday, there's no surprises in grades because they see what all the number grades are on the papers, and they can comment on it if they have a question.
Yeah.
Whatever.
We do that too, up through the fourth grade. In the fifth grade, which is probably a little bit early, they have to start organizing themselves some, and that folder doesn't go home anymore, and it begins to be a problem. Funny thing is, we do that, and we have a website where they can see every grade that goes in and what the average is. That, you know, they've got it in real time, and we still have had slip ups where parents have been surprised. Oh my goodness, I didn't know he was in a 70.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
I have an idea that was shared with me by another teacher that would be helpful in terms of the notes that you keep on the students. And what she told me she did was she would keep a sheet of labels on a clipboard. And she would, if something happened with a student, she'd write it on the label with the date.
Great.
And then she didn't have to worry about it being in the file right away. Later, she'd go and stick them.
Good.
Oh,
yeah.
Stick them at the file.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a lot of parents doing that, or do they just not do it?
The last time I heard a number, it was 20-something percent of our parents participated in that. Isn't that sad?
How long have you been at it?
About 5 years. Yeah, it's a long time. Now, we have other parents who are on every 15 minutes. Why don't you have the Latin graded yet? What's going on? What's going on? Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. That's unacceptable. He calls them personally and says you have to have a conference with your teacher. Yeah, you got to set, you know, it goes back to setting the level of expectation. This is the way it's going to be. You signed on for this. So it's hard to hold that line sometimes. But, yeah, the administrator calls personally if it gets to that point. Yes, ma'am? I would say that it would be a very rare occasion when I would retest a student. I mean, it's almost an unimaginable situation. What I would rather see come out of that conference, and that may be one where you have the administrator there ahead of time and you two put your heads together beforehand. What I would rather see come out of that conference is, here's why he knew it ahead of time and didn't get it on the test. Now let's talk about how to fix that problem so going forward we would do better. That's why I'm not saying that I haven't retested students. It's so. Sorry, no. Yeah, thank you all very much. Have a good evening. Yes, ma'am.
Have our conferences. Do you